Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about New Scientist, an issue from the 24th of November 2018. The editorial by, Emily Wilson. It starts like this. The first one is Open Science. It's time to revolutionize academic publishing. Can I say that's a bugbear of mine? You have to even pay for articles written in 18, something or other. It's pretty amazing. Here's the trivia question for you. This is by Emily Wilkinson. What is the most profitable business in the world? You might think oil or maybe banking. You'd be wrong. The answer is academic publishing. Its profits margins are vast, reportedly in the region of 40%. The reason it's so lucrative is that most of its costs is picked up by taxpayers. Publicly funded researchers do the work, write it up, judge it for its merits, and yet the resulting intellectual property ends up in the hands of the publisher. To rub salt in the wound, they then sell it via exorbitant subscriptions and paywalls, often paid for by taxpayers too. Some readers may scent a whiff of hypocrisy, given New Scientist also charges for content, but good journalism does not come free. There you go. But that is pretty amazing that the government actually then has to, pays for the research and then has to fund expenditure for the publishers to pay for it. The academic publishing business model is indefensible. Practically everybody, even the companies that profit from it, acknowledges that it has to change. And yet the status quo has proven extremely resilient. I think it's going to be actually wiped out by the internet. That's my feeling. The latest attempt to break the mold is called Plan S, created by an umbrella group called Coalition S. It demands that all publicly funded research be made freely available. When Plan S was unveiled in September, its backers expected support to snowball, but only a minority in Europe, 43 research funding bodies, have signed up, and the hope for participation from the US has failed to materialize. Meanwhile, a grassroots campaign against it has gathered momentum. Plan S deserves a chance. The scientists who oppose it have real concerns, but are letting the perfect be the enemy of good. Research funders should put their worries aside too, on behalf of taxpayers who fill their coffers. Plan S only works if everyone gets on board. If it fails, it's hard to see how the iron grip of academic publishing can ever be broken. It's going to be broken, I feel. I see ways of breaking. Okay, let radical ideas bloom. When New Scientist first wrote to ecologist Monica Gaglino, asked for an interview, her response was unexpected. She couldn't commit to anything immediately because she was about to seal herself away in a pitch dark room for 40 days to meditate. Oh, okay. When the interview eventually happened, she revealed more of the same vein. Once in need of some research inspiration, she visited a shaman deep inside the Amazon jungle, she said. Oh, dear. Gagliano's research itself is unorthodox too. She is known for a string of experiments that she claims show that plants can learn and associate stimulus with reward, just as Pavlov's dogs did. Well, I think any living system has evolved to solve its problems finding light. Plant biologists may not like her use of the word learn one bit, but Gagliano is sticking to it and plans experiments that might reveal the equivalent of a plant's brain. Oh, God. She's out to do no less than transform how we see the kingdom of life. For our part, we applaud Gagliano. She is doing the right thing by testing her ideas and publishing the experiments. You can't do anything more than that. Some might call the ideas out there, but what great scientific breakthrough wasn't viewed like this to begin with? Yeah, but also a whole lot of stupid science was viewed like this for a reason. But, and again, I think people's stupid brushes are just a bit too broad. Volcano of fire erupts. This is the next page. Again, no author for this. Thousands of people were evacuated from an area of a volcano of fire in Guatemala on Monday after it erupted. This is obviously on the 24th. For the fifth time this year, the eruption appears to have quickly died down. Once every 2 months. The authorities were taking no chances after around 200 people died in the eruption in June, during which a fluid-like mass of air and debris called a pyroclastic flow, that is, yeah, the actual density becomes such that the dust interacts with the air, so it is effectively a fluid, struck several villages on the surrounding slopes. So the important thing is that the heat in a pyroclastic flow is kept inside. It doesn't sort of heat the air because it's within itself. Such flows can reach up to 700 kilometres an hour. That's if they're going down a slope, obviously. Volcano fire, so-called Volcán de Fuego, is one of the most active volcanoes in Central America. Numerous small eruptions occur each day, but large ones are rare. That's interesting. And so, yeah, it's basically a air-rock mixture, so it can reach 700 kilometres an hour by quite easily just going down a few hundred metres of slope. NASA picks Mars roving landing site. After 4 years of deliberation, NASA has picked the next Mars spot, Jezero Crater. The hope is it has the right environment to preserve signs of ancient life. Oh, God. Satellite images suggest the 50-kilometer-wide crater, well, that's a pretty big one, once had a river flowing along its rim and into a big lake. So it must be a pretty old crater. Yeah. It's thought to hold rocks that can preserve organic molecules such as clays and carbonates. It's located on the 18th degrees north of the equator, so it's almost in the tropics, isn't it? Sydney's 23 degrees, so that would be about Brizzy. Quote, getting samples from this unique area will revolutionise how we think about Mars and its ability to harbour life, quote, says NASA's Tom Zuckerbrunchen in a statement. If all goes well to plan, NASA will launch its six-wheeled rover in July 2020, and it will land on Mars in February 2021. The lander will include a solar-powered drone, or, to kick up the interesting visits. Now, that is cute. I just can't see how a drone could work in such a thin atmosphere. What an amazing thing. So, obviously, it really hurts my head. I just can't think. Wow. Because the Martian atmosphere is very thin, so you get no lift. Your propellers spin. They spin very fast, but no lift. Be interesting to see how it works. The European Space Agency also sends a rover to Mars in 2020, and they recently chose Oxaplanum, a large plane packed with clay rocks, as a preferred destination. Well, there you go. Europeans are sending a rover, and they generally do things a bit better than the US, in my general opinion. A dry summer's set the stage for campfire. And it's unfortunate that we have campfires, and it's called. The cost of California's devastating, I'll bet they say global warming somewhere, devastating wildfire known as campfire continues to rise. As new scientists went to press, there were 79 deaths and almost 700 people still accounted for. Oh, yuck. Although, but in the US, I don't know where these citizens are anyway. Authorities say the fire, which has hit the town of Paradise below and other parts of Butt Country, will probably continue to burn until the end of the month. The first major rainfall, not too much, that's a few more days back then, the first major rainfall in 6 months is expected this week, which may help contain the blaze. However, wet conditions bring a threat of mudslides and could also hamper the search and rescue efforts. Dear. This year has seen California's most destructive wildfire season on record, with 7,597 fires burning 1.7 million acres in total. Strange that they use the word acre, because that's a US unit. Why not convert it to us metric readers? The long dry spell and record summer temperatures created ideal wildfire conditions. Oh, here you go, climate change. Due to climate change, such dry conditions are about 7 times more likely than they were back in the 19th century, says Patrick Brown, the Carnegie Institute for Science at Washington. Oh, dear. Thank goodness the Institute for Science. The Institute is hard to... Oh, the Institute. Dear. Okay, metrologist bid le clanque au revoir. I really love this story. The kilogram is to be defined using a fundamental constant instead of an old lump of metal. An old lump of metal. That metal, how old is it? It's nearly a century old. Oh, yeah, it is. Well, it's over a century old. The issue is how you call metal old. Okay, following a unanimous vote by the Conference of Weights and Measures in Versailles, France last week, since 1889, the kilogram has been defined using a cylinder of platinum and iridium known as Le Grand K, or the International Prototype Kilogram. I should make a point that the RPK is defined as one exactly kilogram. It's always 1 kilogram. You file it, it's one. Okay. Copies of the weight has been distributed around the world, but discrepancies between these have been revealed, has revealed that the Grand K has lost a little weight and brought down the value of the kilogram with it. So the most important thing is that they've kept parity with each other. The copies have kept parity with each other, and then it's indicated that the actual weight is losing weight. From May next year, the official kilogram will be defined by Planck's constant, which describes the size of the smallest pocket of... I'll just read it to you. Planck's constant describes the size of the smallest packet of energy. Absolute bollocks. It's the smallest packet of angular momentum it describes. It's units of energy, and its units are energy seconds. So it's not a packet. That's so confused. That's incorrect. I remember thinking that, going through the logic. I think it's the energy is quantized. I think this is the entire thing. They say the energy of an atom is quantized. Complete and utter rubbish. That's an HC mistake. It's so endemic. And of course, someone reading this will just reinforce this mistake. So I can tell you the Planck's constants of units of energy seconds, or angular momentum, which is kilograms, meters per second, meters squared per second. It's the two units of it, and the everything is quantized in terms of angular momentum. There you go. Not energy. The Planck's constant is incredibly small. So it's measured using a specialized piece of equipment called the Kibble balance. I think a Kibble balance allows you to compare one object against another, and it's not to the fact that the Planck's constant is incredibly small. I think that's incredibly bad. That is the person who's written this hasn't understood it. So the Kibble balance is a current measuring thing, which simulates a force, a mass, inertial mass with current. So you can measure the current exactly, calibrate the current, and therefore you can measure it. You can actually make one out of science, but the fact that they have to use it because they have to use the balance because it's Planck's constant small is just not correct. Okay, let's see what this next sentence. So far we've got, the second sentence, just completely wrong. The hope is eventually anyone will be able to accurately weigh anything without having to fly to France to compare with the Grand K. Well, no, that's three sentences which are completely wrong and misleading. It's so upsetting as a science teacher, your student can understand that and doesn't realize the embedded problems here. Now, this is interesting. This is a picture of a drone, so a plane, and its overall structure. Oh, okay. That would be. It's got a series of 8 long fins underneath it. it's just really difficult to interpret the diagram, what's going on in the diagram. So it's got a series of Venetian fins, which I suppose is the iron thrust. It flew for only, I say, zero emissions. The plane has liftoff. Oh, God. Steams of irons could propel aircraft of the future, reports Douglas Heaven, or the momentum given to irons. So I suppose it would be air gets ionized and pushed back. It's equivalent to a propeller. But I can't see how that's as different from myself pushing air with an iron propeller and an actual physical propeller and an electric motor. I can't see what the difference is. Let's try and work out, see what it says. Okay. It only flew for 12 seconds, the same as the Wright brothers achieved in their maiden flight. But it marks another aeronautical milestone. Ooh, okay. After 9 years of work, Stephen Barrett in the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and his colleagues have flown the first of its kind zero-emission plane with no moving parts. Well, the main thing is no moving parts, wouldn't it? Oh, yeah. So a propeller is necessarily a moving part. The small unpiloted plane flew 55 metres in an indoor hall, sports hall, steered by remote control. Instead of propellers or jet engines, the plane uses electrodes on its wings to produce ions that push against the surrounding air. The team claims that the plane is quieter and cleaner than any other powered aircraft. Well, that is interesting, because it looks as though the iron thing is beneath it, and it looks as though it doesn't look as though it's producing an airflow. So the major thing is that people think that it is true that the jet pushes air. The main thing about jets is they don't push air over the wings. Like the jet engine is beneath the wings. Okay, so it's not producing air pushed over the wings. And I think this is a similar misconception going on here. So you go for a flight in an aircraft. In the old aircraft, you could imagine that the propellers were actually throwing air, and the air was coming out of the jet going over the wings. In these aircraft, the air jet is actually beneath the wings and it's pushing the air forward, but it's actually the momentum of the air. There's a conservation of momentum going on. Let's see what they have to say. Quote, "It wasn't clear that it would work," says Barrett. Quite a few colleagues said it has less than 1% chance. The idea of reducing aircraft thrust via electric fuel down its aerodynamics was first explored in the 1960s. Electrodes are used to create electric discharge that produces electrically charged atoms and molecules in the air. Electric fuel then accelerates this ions back towards the plane. Now, the interesting thing is that you can use this completely in reverse to generate electricity. You can do exactly the opposite. And here you're desperately trying to push a gust of wind in Antarctica. You've got these huge gales flowing all the time. So bear in mind, you can reverse engineer this such that the wind generates electricity. It's pretty amazing. Okay, the collisions with air molecules produce a thrust force in the opposite direction, pushing the plane forward. I must admit, it's like similar that the rockets are pushing the jet. So, I mean, this is equivalent to a rocket engine, okay, with an air intake, which is a jet. But the jet is not being pushed forward because the air is pushing with the cone, nose cone, so the tail cone. There is a certain case of this, that the air wants to expand and push and pushes the rocket up. But it's the fact that if I fire an air molecule out, if I fire a bullet out, the fact that it hits the air is irrelevant. It's left me. So it's the electric, it's the force applied to the iron equals the force, equal and opposite force applied to the aircraft. End of story, mate. But nobody could make the ionic wind work for a plane. The physics of thrust had not been fully worked out, said Barrett. So the team used a computer, to generate a design that hit upon a perfect balance between weight, power, and flight. The resulting wingspan had a wingspan of 5 meters, which is, you know, fairly across the wing, a weight of just 2.5 kilograms, which is not much, and it produces more thrust per unit power than a standard jet engine. Mm-hmm. I could well imagine it, because the engine heats up the gas. There are a long way to go before such a plane could do anything useful, however. A bigger plane would need a larger power supply, making it too heavy to fly. Why? Why doesn't it scale? What's the special thing about the light scale? Is it the Reynolds number as you go down? The team optimized the design for the lightness, not speed. It only flies at 5 meters per second if you're impaired, which you have a chance. I think running that, that's as fast as you could run. Compared to 200 meters per second or more for a passenger jet, hopefully more. The air, 200 meters per second. What's 200 meters per second? It's 200 meters per second. It's a kilometer in. Oh shit! So it's a kilometer in 10 seconds. 6 kilometers in a minute. 200 meters per second is 6 kilometers a minute. Is that right? So that's how many per second? So that's let's work this out. 200 times 60 seconds is 12 kilometers a minute. Times that by 60 again to get in kilometers per, the distance per hour. So that's 200 meters per second per second. That's let's work this out. That's 624 kilometers an hour, which is a pretty fast jet plane. Passenger jets, okay, I'll take that one. With air travel continuing to increase, many people hope that electrical planes will one day provide a better alternative to jets. See clean green aviation below. In Norway has been testing electric two-seater planes and wants to short-haul flights leaving airports to be electric by 2040. That would be electricity, the iron air. In theory, electric aircraft have lower carbon footprints than conventional planes. They also produce no air pollution during flight, which is a big thing. But the batteries need to be power them are so heavy that larger planes are currently unavailable. Well, yeah, it's the distance. Electric planes won't replace existing passenger jets without a battery breakthrough, says Lynette Dray of the University College of London. I don't know what she's thinking. She estimates that it will be at least 30 years before batteries can get even small passenger jets, such as a Boeing 737, into the air. You're lucky 30 years, I wouldn't even say that. What's more, switching to electric planes without tackling where the power comes from won't cut emissions overall. Most electricity still comes from burning fossil fuels. Quote, if all planes were electric today, the power from the US grid, their footprint would be worse, said Barrett. With their greater efficiency, electrodynamics could give electric flights a boost it needs. The team designs pushes the limits of what is possible with today's materials and electronic technology. But Barrett thinks that it could be made to fly faster for longer in the future. The prototype only produces thrusts around its wings. Barrett wants to make every surface, including the aircraft's body, propulsive. He thinks future planes might have two sets of wings, one at the front of the other, which with the flow of ions between them. This could also steer the plane by changing the shape of its electromagnetic field, he says. Oh, God. The Zot would be a plane that was carried along inside a pocket of electrically charged wind. The whole aircraft would move through the air in a slipstream, he says. I'm just gobsmacked. The entire thing is that you want to charge an ion, and then you want to neutralize an ion. Otherwise, you're just going to create a big, giant yo-yo, which might be that bad. That's insane. That's going to finish us off soon. Oh, that's insane. I'm sure there's something mentally dumb about that. Clean green aviation. Passenger planes that fly using electrodynamics, seen in Man's Story, are many years away. There are three alternatives to greener flight. Yeah, okay. Biofuel. Aircraft powered by jet fuel, partly produced by biomass, have a lower carbon emissions. A few airports, including Los Angeles International, are already refueling some planes with biofuel. However, growing enough biomass to power the world's aircraft could cause environmental problems of its own. I think if you use that and grow biofuel, you're just that's insane. Electric planes. Small electric planes are being developed for short flights. This could be decades before the batteries are both light and powerful enough to power a larger aircraft. I think drones are the major thing. Hybrid planes. Like hybrid cars, hybrid planes could use a mixture of fuel and electricity to make them greener. Airbus, Rolls-Royce and Siemens are collaborating on a hybrid plane that could use batteries during takeoff when fuel consumption is greatest. I could well imagine. Now, I think you could do regenerative braking. That could be a way. And of course, the electromagnetic pulse. Okay, this is the first episode. Comes to an end. I'm going off to make some lunch for my children. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.